Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. Julie and I were talking about a conference she went to recently, the Midwest Veterinary Conference, and as you might have suspected, Julie is a complete behavior nerd, and so she totally loved the conference and came home with all sorts of amazing things she wanted to share. So I said, don't tell me, tell everyone. So let's record it. So Julie, let's talk about the conference and all the things that you learned.
All right. Well, the Midwestern Veterinary Conference is held every February in Columbus at the Convention Center. So it's very easy for me to get to. And they have developed two behavior tracks. And it goes for 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Oftentimes I'll go all 4 days, but this year I only went 2 days. And this year they had Elise Christensen Bell. And she is one of those 70 board certified veterinary animal behavior. She has the DACVB, the coveted DACVB after her name. And she talked primarily about the first day was all about behavior with pets and kids, thunderstorm phobia. I'm sorry, I didn't stay for the cat one because I had other things I had to do, like meet somebody for coffee. But which was really important because it was another vet. Okay, I was meeting a vet. and then the next day, she talked about medications. Trigger time medications, daily medications, polypharmacy for behavioral disorders. What do you do when your first medication plan fails? Quieting symptoms fast. So I spent the whole day talking about medications. I didn't talk about them. Hearing other people talk about medications. But I think that there are some important things that I learned that usually the reason I go to this is not because I'm a vet and then not because I play a vet on TV, which I don't, but because the behavior there is so good. They bring in some of the best. They had you, for goodness sakes, Colleen, 1 year. So they bring in the best of the best. And it's
really is a good, very nice conference. I very much enjoyed the two that I've been to.
Yes. And the thing that's so good about it is they bring in really good people so that the vets, and most vets, they will readily admit that they don't know as much about behavior as they would like. They don't get a lot of it in school. Sometimes they only get like one class of behavior. And so this is an opportunity for them to really sort of dig in a bit more and learn more about behavior problems. And I also appreciate the fact that she at one point talked about the importance of incorporating trainers into all this, because we're the ones who are sort of on the front lines of seeing this behavior, and that you really need to work with trainers to provide for this for the client what they really need, the behavior modification program plus the pharmacology. So the first one she talked about was pets and kids. Have fun and be safe, parts 1 and 2. I'm not going to go through all of those because that would be way beyond everything that we've done here. But I did want to bring up a couple of points that I really liked. One of the things she said was, and I quote, contrary to popular belief, dogs, cats, and other common pets do not come pre-programmed with a knowledge of how to act around children. And children certainly do not naturally understand how to interact with other animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really good point to make. We tend to think that dogs and kids are supposed to go together like, you know, as you said, Tom, I think pie and ice cream or, you know, cookies and milk. And that's not necessarily true. They have to learn how to do that. And she referenced success zones, which we talked about when we did with Jen Shryock.
Jen Shryock from Family Paws Parent Educators.
Right.
Yeah, she's awesome. And the success stations that that they recommend are really helpful, having a targeted area where your dog knows this is what happens here. And this is what happens there. And that can be a very helpful strategy in a household, is having specific areas for certain activities like resting or playing, not necessarily being the same spot.
Right. Right. And she did reference familypaws.com. Mm-hmm. And she referenced you, by the way, because I told her to. And she did.
Who knew?
I knew. But anyway. So one of the things she talked about as far as success zones, for example, she said, this space is not a torture chamber, right? This spot, the animal must be taught to enjoy this resting space for relaxation and right. or play. So right. it's not some place you're going to send your dog for punishment. This has to be a place that the dog wants to go and is happy being there.
Yeah. So their haven.
Their safe haven. Another couple of points was use positive reinforcement training to teach touch, target, sit, back up, go to bed, to this, as in the success zone. You know, go, because mm-hmm. you're not going to say, go to your success zone. You know, it's like, go to bed. Find it in other useful behaviors. She said, and yes, cats can be taught these things as well. So there you go. Not by me, but other more talented trainers than I could teach the cats to do that. Also, too, use positive reinforcement to teach the animal to come briskly when called. I think that briskly is a really important adjective there. I think mm-hmm. your dog needs to understand that when I'm saying the word come, it's really in your interest to hustle on over to me.
That can be an even more important deal in a household with kids, because there may be a reason that you very much want to separate kids and dogs and you want to move somebody quickly. So being able to just briskly get your dog to come towards you, gets your dog to briskly walk away from children.
Right. In fact, I use that today. I was helping Henry make his bed, and Zuzu and Bear decided that they would help, which was real. I mean, I hate to break it to them, but they're really not helpful when it comes to making beds. Zuzu really thinks she thinks if she lies on the bed, that somehow that's really helpful. So I had Henry go get some treats from my office, and then he stood in the hall and he asked him to come. He showed him the treats. He shook the little thing, showed him the treats. They ran right to him. And we went to my office, threw the treats in my office. They went in and he closed the gate. So that was, you know, and even there I was able to have, because the dogs were so used to coming briskly to me, I was able to use that to have Henry be successful with them.
Exactly.
So she said also too, you can use calming supplements or calming tools such as body wraps. Like we talked about in T-Touch. Pheromones and or medications to treat any ongoing anxiety. All meals delivered in puzzle toys. How many times have we talked about intelligence toys and how useful they can be? So, in fact, I was just talking to an owner yesterday about, you know, your dog could have a stuffed Kong while you're having dinner. Might be something that they could do too, you know. Give them something to do that keeps them interactive, maybe on the other side of a gate. So that everybody is something to do. This is one I liked a lot. Provide a safe and comfortable overnight sleeping spot where the animals cannot be physically disturbed by children. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important for dogs to have that safe spot, not just during the day where kids can run by and yell or whatever, but I'm safe to hear. But no, this is a safe, secure spot that kids can't even, you know, run by and get to. And I think that everybody needs a good night's sleep, and it's important to provide that for your dog. And the two other points that I thought were really good in this particular session, these two sessions, were understand species-specific body language as soon as possible.
Yes.
That means kid body language, too. Mm-hmm. You know what your own kid's particular stress signals are. If your kid starts, you know, maybe sitting there and his foot starts jittering, maybe that's telling you that he's getting a little nervous because the dog's getting too close to his peanut butter sandwich. And he's not going to say anything, but there's going to be body language for kids, dogs, cats. I'm sure ferrets have body language that needs to be interpreted.
No doubt. I think that's really such an overlooked point, is that we tell people supervise all the time. I mean, that's just a standard advice, supervise. But we're not teaching body language.
Right.
Actually, this week I went to a session. There's a local organization that helps adults with disabilities find employment. And they were doing a program about learning about dogs. So a lot of people with some cognitive issues and things like that. And in that, they were singing a song about how to meet a dog. And so, you know me, I was already like, what are they going to say? What are they going to say? I was trying to be like smiling and hoping it wasn't going to be a horrendous, and it was not, thank goodness. But one of the points they made was, you know, standing far enough away so that the dog can say yes or no. And I thought, isn't that lovely? Now, they haven't actually taught these people how to know if the dog said yes or no. But they're acknowledging that we do need to ask the dog. And that's right. Huge. And admittedly, it was just one song and one, you know, I'm not trying to say anything about this program because I thought they were awesome and they're working really hard.
Sing it for us.
I don't remember the actual song because I was just there for their one performance. And, you know, I was having a little behavioral stress myself listening to make sure there wasn't going to be anything bad in the song. But the idea of you really cannot supervise unless you understand the normal, relaxed, comfortable body language and then the stress behaviors of a species. And they're not the same. So cat body language and dog body language and kid body language and ferret body language all have their own unique pieces.
Right.
And individuals within them makes it even more complex. So one dog's stress and another's won't match. But really being able to recognize that is such a huge piece of it.
Your individual is right. And yeah. I'm sure that frogs have stress signals too, you know, but I don't know what those are either. So
in your next life, when you become a frog trainer, I'm sure you'll learn
that. That's right. Okay. So then the last point I wanted to make, which is something you just touched on, which I'm really glad you said, was know that adult supervision is not enough. Most young children are bitten by dogs they know in the presence of an adult. This can even be an adult who is actively attempting to control the situation.
Yes.
So it's really important to understand that stuff like that can just happen even when you're standing right there. And so that's not to terrify you into not having dogs, but just know that the situation can deteriorate very quickly, even if you are actively supervising. And so that's why I think the body language is particularly important. So when you begin to first see those first few signs that things are getting uncomfortable for whomever, then things need to be separated before you get to the point where something happens even while being supervised. Which is one of the reasons why, in general, the rule in this house is that I don't know where one of my dogs is. That's a really bad sign. but the rule general is no dogs and kids alone, ever. It doesn't happen. So just because even though I have two dogs that I trust implicitly, they're still dogs. They're still animals. Stuff can still happen. Somebody can still step on a paw really hard, you know, or, you know, whatever. So. But I thought those were very good points on pets and kids and ones mm-hmm. If nothing else, it's not that I hadn't heard them before. Great reminders said perhaps in a different way. And so I always find that to be really useful as a reminder. Yes, that's something I need to remember to tell. You know, you get so many things in your head you want to tell your owners. Sometimes it's a good reminder. So the next one after pets and kids was, you're going to make fun of this. Out the window, the multimodal treatment options for thunderstorm phobia. There you go. Multimodal, meaning you can do a lot of different stuff to help your dog. Multimodal means that we're looking at treatment options for this problem that encompass a wide variety of solutions, including behavioral, medications, environmental, all different kinds of things that you can do to help your dogs. There were a couple, I think there were 4 points I wanted to make about thunderstorm phobia.
Awesome.
Thunderstorm phobia is a behavioral disorder commonly seen in adult dogs. And the older the dog, the more likely they are to develop thunderstorm phobia. I don't know why that is. She didn't seem to know, but it's true. And I know that in our house, we had two dogs as they got older, both developed the thunderstorm phobia. Or a thunderstorm discomfort was probably more like it. Both Hudson and Rebel did. Although
it's a terrible thing to think too, because you can never actually just go, phew, my dog does not have thunderstorm phobia. Because
no,
it's always
can't.
Yet.
Yes.
But so far, my dog does not have thunderstorm phobia. Yay!
Well, I don't know if Edzo's a little bit older now, and I would think that probably would have developed it by now if he were going to, but
well, is there a range for that? Did you learn about a range when we might see the onset of thunderstorm phobia?
No, I'm just making this up as I go.
Awesome. But it is an interesting thing, just the whole, because it can be so debilitating for the dog. They're just so stressed out. And then families who are racing around trying to get home because, oh my gosh, it's going to rain. It's a very tough thing. So, yeah, if you have a dog that doesn't have thunderstorm phobia, it's something to be thankful for every time. But discouraging to realize that some dogs, even if they don't have it now.
Yeah, there's something
we haven't ruled out that it's coming.
Right. And I think part of that is, you know, we talked to Dr. Karras about elder dog care. One of the things is that elder dogs become a little bit more fragile, you know, and so perhaps they may have had a tendency, like, I don't like these storms, but I have enough resources, resiliency, because I'm younger, mm-hmm. that I can get through it. And as I get older, I have fewer resources to devote towards those things that are disturbing to me. And maybe I've just witnessed one too many great big booms, and I finally, it's the straw that broke the camel's back. So I think it may have to do with the dog's own fragility as it ages, and perhaps the constant exposure to something over time, that each time it's just a little bit worse until finally I just can't do this anymore. I don't know. That's just me talking off the top of my head. But one of the things that is interesting about thunderstorm phobia is that separation anxiety, noise phobia, and thunderstorm phobia are frequently, well, okay, their word is comorbid, but I think the word is occur together. I think these things oftentimes...
They all make you want to die? Is that what you're saying?
They want you to die together. No, I think what it means is that they happen together. Okay, comorbid.
Yes, they do. That is what it means.
In addition, many dogs with thunderstorm phobia have other fears, phobias, impulse control disorders, and or anxieties. Mm-hmm. And that when the thunderstorm phobia is triggered, it can worsen other behavioral pathologies or problems. That's just another fancy word for problems. Significantly, causing the dog to rapidly, oh my goodness, deteriorate. We're just going to say deteriorate because the words are very long. And subsequently increase the severity of the disorder.
Right.
So
that's certainly held true with the dogs I've seen. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, that's definitely the case for the dogs I've known with bad thunderstorm phobia. They have other sensitivities.
Yes, they tend to be sensitive individuals. And so that because of that, because of the sort of multifaceted nature of, that's not a word they use, that's my word.
Julie loves big words. Anyone notice that Julie loves big words?
Because there's a lot of junk going on, okay? they say that multimodal, meaning multifaceted, immediate therapy is preferred. I can't even say the simple words.
They mean try all the stuff from all the angles as fast as possible. That's what they mean. Let's do all the things.
So proactive behavior modification, teaching the dogs new coping strategies, event management protocols. That sounds like something you do at the convention, right? We need event management protocols.
Where's the event manager?
Anti-anxiety supplements, pheromones, various other things. So if your dog has a thunderstorm phobia and other anxieties, you need to be looking at doing a wide variety of things in order to help this dog feel safe. So you develop this plan. You know, what are we going to do for example, with Hudson, I always knew when thunderstorms were coming because Hudson would come into my office and he'd just look at me like, Mom, the boom boom skies are coming. And so I'd get out his thunder shirt and we'd wrap him in the thunder shirt and I'd spritz him with some DAP and then I'd put on Through a Dog's Ear music and then he and I would both fall asleep. But you need to have a plan in place so that when you know something like this is happening, you can kick into action and help your dog before it develops to the point where he can't come back. So once you have a plan in place for basic needs like, you know, water, food, shelter, exercise in a non-threatening space, all these things, Families need help keeping the animal feeling safe. Safety is so important. The dog tells us what feels safe for him by his behavior. So is he willing to eat, to play, to interact with his environment and you in a normal way? If he is, then he's probably feeling safe. If he's not doing those things, he's probably not feeling safe, and you need to rethink your plan about how we're going to get him back into the safe zone. These dogs need a safe place to rest during thunderstorms or perceived weather events. So you need to figure out some place where you can minimize the effect of the storms. And this point, I really appreciated a lot. She said, all dogs with thunderstorm phobia deserve to have their suffering relieved through the proactive and rational use of medications. Mm-hmm. And I thought the way she phrased that was, one, not too wordy. Okay. Didn't use a lot of big words. But the fact is she's talking about the fact they are truly suffering. Right. These are dogs who are really suffering emotionally and mentally, and they deserve to have that relieved. And sometimes the only way that's going to do that is through some kind of either supplement or some kind of medication that may be what they call a trigger medication, one that can be very fast acting in a short period of time. Or other things, she calls them trigger time medications, ones that are quick acting. And for usually if they're quick acting, they also last for a short period of time, which may be perfect for a thunderstorm. You know, it could be that, I think there is one, I think it's clonidine, Clomicom, I believe is FDA approved for thunderstorm phobia. But don't quote me on that. You'll have to check with your vet. Always, always, always check with your vet about medications. Okay? I'm not a vet. I'm not prescribing medications. I just want you to realize that there are medications out there that might be advantageous for your dog that could be used for a trigger time event rather than long term. Your dog may well, if it has underlying anxieties, might also need a long term medication. But then there are other drugs that your dog can have for those triggers that are really particularly difficult. So, but the idea that they deserve to have their suffering relieved, I thought was a really important point.
And it's a great way to phrase it, because I have encountered people who describe their dog's behavior during a storm as more obnoxious, you know? Like, he just goes crazy and he won't settle down and he's just pestering me. I'm like, yeah, that's the suffering. There it is. Yeah. So it's extreme anxiety and the dog is not being bad, not doing something to you. They're having a meltdown and saying, this is the scariest thing I can imagine and it's happening right now.
And I need help. I need help. And it could be that all the other things that we do, the environmental things, the DAP diffusers and the Zyclean and L-theanine and, you know, Zentral and some of the over-the-counter kind of things may not be enough to really relieve that suffering. So, but working with your vet, you should be able to find the right combination of over-the-counter and perhaps trigger time medications so that your dog doesn't have to suffer. So that was the point I wanted to make there, because there's also oftentimes other underlying anxieties that will need to be addressed as well.
Right.
Okay. So then the next one we talked about was house soiling, which we've had a house soiling episode. So just go listen to that one. But if you're not doing that, there's a couple of other things I thought were really interesting points about house soiling. And one of the ones is, she says, house soiling can damage the human-animal bond and leave the animal vulnerable to rehoming, abuse, abandonment, neglect, and euthanasia.
Yeah.
And so this is a serious problem. And I think I think she brought that up because I think most vets say, you're just not trying hard enough. I don't think someone realize how distressing. I've had owners who are just like, that's it. The dog is out of here tomorrow unless you can fix that today. And it can be a huge thing. And I think the other thing And the paper realizes that house sitting is pretty much a normal behavior unless the dog is taught otherwise. Everybody's got to eliminate. Poop happens. And unless you help him find a place that's appropriate, we're going to find our own appropriate place.
Right. It's really easy to accidentally teach a dog that you don't like bodily functions.
Oh, yeah.
If all you ever do is fuss about them going in the house, but you never throw a party when they go outside, they're like, oh, people don't understand that I have to go to the bathroom. And I have to go to the bathroom. So the best plan is to hide when I go to the bathroom because people get angry if I go to the bathroom. And you're like, no, wrong message, wrong message.
Right. Or even if they don't make a big deal about the dog going inside, if you still don't reward him for going outside, it's going to take a lot longer for him to get the message that that's where you prefer that I go. Because nobody's telling me in any clear way, shape, or form that that's what's preferable. Mm-hmm. What I thought was a couple of interesting points, again. I think on this one, I numbered them. I have three house training points. The first one, which I thought was fascinating, is that the majority of shelter dogs can be house trained in 4 weeks if the owners are provided with 5 minutes of counseling at the time of adoption. 5 minutes. That's all
that's
it takes.
That's awesome. 5 minutes.
That's what I thought. Now, I know you're going to say, well, what's those 5 minutes? But I didn't write that down because I think I probably already knew it. But I think it probably can be summed up with supervision, 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 right? You need to supervise. What I tell owners is three things. One is I define what I mean by house trained. If you don't have an accident in the house for 3 weeks, I consider you house trained. So let's start out with a definition of
my rule is longer. I say 2 months.
Really?
I do. Like 2 months. But just so long as people have some number in their head, it doesn't really matter what the number is. But, well, it does matter. If they're like 48 hours, the dog is great.
No.
But a lot can happen in a period of time. And I want you to have like some consistency under your belt before you're like, yeah, she's trained. She's got it.
Right. Okay. Well, 2 months is probably not a bad thing, especially if you're dealing with people who are somewhat erratic in their house training techniques. Then, yeah, you might want to extend it. So I define what we mean by house training. Then the most common indoor mistake is lack of supervision and too much freedom for the dog. Okay. And the biggest outside mistake is too much freedom and lack of reinforcement. Mm-hmm. So you need to take the dog out on a leash. Go to the spot you want him to go. Do your best imitation of a telephone pole, right? As soon as the dog is going, you are reaching into your bait bag, bringing out that wonderful treat to hand to him as he's finishing going to the bathroom. Because what happens is people say, well, I treated him. He went out, he went to the bathroom, he came in, I gave him a treat. And I'm like, yeah, so what did you reward him for going out and coming in? And that teaches a dog to go out and come in and go out and come in and go out and come in because every time I come in, I get a treat.
It's awfully fun.
Yes, at least for the dog. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting. Just 5 minutes of counseling can get a dog house trained in 4 weeks. The second thing is that here comes the word again. Are you ready? Comorbid anxiety and panic disorders can make it virtually impossible to even house train animals to control their urination and bowel movements. So basically what they're saying is if your dog...
You actually can have the whatever scared out of you, right?
Yes.
That's what they're saying.
Yes. Or if you have an underlying anxiety, or if they say you have thunderstorm phobia, right? And you panic, you may not be able to control your bowels and bladder.
Yeah.
So if your dog has been house trained, has now developed a phobia, and is now not house trained, there's probably a concurrent cause here that needs to be addressed. The next sentence is, it is critical medical and or behavioral comorbidities problems. Okay. Medical and behavioral problems be assessed and treated in order to see improvements in house soiling behaviors. So if your dog has an anxiety disorder, you need to address that if you want to have any kind of improvement in your house training problems. And then the last one, the last point, and then you can talk, okay? Punishment is contraindicated for animals or house soil. The typical rub his nose in it strategy is unnecessary and can cause dogs to fear handling as well as urinating and defecating in front of their owners, which we have talked about. So do not punish your dog for making a mistake. It's not going to solve the problem. It's only going to make new problems arise. So then you'll have comorbid problems, right?
Oh, no.
So if you're interested in we can post on the on our website, if you're interested in the study that showed that I lost the piece of paper, that dogs can just 5 minutes of counseling. I can post the reference to that if somebody would like to take a look at that study. That was by Dr. Megan Heron of The Ohio State University. It's called Effects of Pre-Adoption Counseling for Owners on House Training Success Among Dogs Acquired from Shelters. And it was from the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association. So I will make that available online. So
that'd be great.
Yeah. So that was the summation of it, except for the next day. And I'm just going to go over this super quick. Is we talked about medications for most of the day. And the idea behind all of this talk on medications was that you can look at medications in two different ways. You can look at long-term medications. So if your dog has an underlying anxiety problem that needs to be addressed, kind of like people, right? Mm-hmm. That you can be looking at long-term medications that will help, that may take, there's more selecting. They take a while to build up in the system. They also take a while to get out of the system. Prozac is the classic example of that. I'm not promoting Prozac. I'm just saying it's a classic anti-anxiety medication that takes a while to build up into your system and then drop back off again. Yep. So if you have a dog that has an anxiety, but it also has a trigger, such as thunderstorm phobia, you might want to be talking to your vet about a couple different medications. One to address the underlying anxiety and one to help your dog in those trigger moments. For situational anxiety, such as thunderstorm phobia, so that your dog is a relief of those particular urgent symptoms. And those medications generally are much more fast-acting, but they're also shorter-lasting. So Prozac will stay in your system. Some of these other ones will go into your system and be in your system for 3-4 hours or whatever, and then they quickly leave your system. But they're really beneficial for what they do.
Right.
So I think it's really important if you're talking about a variety of problems with your dog to be able to talk to your vet intelligently. I'm not telling you which medications to take. I'm not telling you even that you need medications. But familiarize yourself with some of the medications that are available so that you and your vet together can make the best decision for you and your dog. And if your vet is not familiar with both trigger time medications as well as long-lasting medications, then find out if there's a veterinary animal behaviorist in your area, because that's exactly what they are trained to do. Mm-hmm. And they know exactly what combinations will work for your dog. And if the first ones don't work, trust me, they have a wealth of medications. So that if Prozac's not working because it's causing your dog to have a shaky leg, well, then maybe we'll move over to Zoloft or something else. So there are a wide variety of options out there. So don't be afraid of medications and don't think that just because one worked, nothing's going to work. As one person put it, or what she said at one point, there are different SSRIs, which are the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, Prozac mm-hmm. being one of them. But Zoloft is also, I believe, in that same category. Just because one didn't work doesn't mean another one won't work, because it's a different medication. It's going to work in a slightly different way.
Right.
So know that there are a variety of medications out there that can be used to help your dog. And that's all I really wanted to say about medications, which is more than what I was going to say, but, you know, less than what I could probably say. So we'll just leave it at that.
And as you can all tell, Julie is a behavior nerd and she totally loves this stuff, which is great because actually I love this stuff too. I pick on her. I pick on everyone when they use words like multimodal. I'll skip that. But I pick on Julie because she comes back from conferences just supercharged about psychopharmacology. I'm like, oh, drugs. And my husband often says to me, you're going to a conference for 3 days to talk about dogs? haven't you already talked about everything about dogs? And I'm, no, not even close. Yes, I can sit in a conference room for days on end listening to someone talk about dogs and come out just as excited. So right. That was fun to hear Julie's thoughts about the Midwest Veterinary Conference.
Yes, which is, and they have great vendors. Last year, I was going to say, this year was not as much fun for me at the vendors as last year. Last year, I was in a behavior track, and I met a vet who, she specializes in greyhounds. And so she and I were talking, and I said, you want to go to the exhibitors hall? She said, sure. And I said, because one of the problems is I see all these really cool pieces of equipment and instruments and stuff, and I really want to talk to somebody about them, but I don't want to take up their time because I'm not going to buy them. And so I said, but if I'm going with a vet, then I can sort of go, can we go over and take a look at that one? Can you ask some questions about that one? So that was fun. But I do learn a lot even from the vendors. You know, I learn a lot about things like nutrition and various kinds of flea and tick medications. Learn a lot about that from them. So, you know, my husband's like, yes, you have a good time. I'm like, sure you don't want to join me? He's like, no, I really don't. Okay, well, you know, sorry for you. You don't get to spend 4 hours talking about psychomedications because, you know, it's too cool.
I know. So there you go. It is. It is indeed. Well, thanks for sharing your experience with us.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.